Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
They thought they'd get away with it until now. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
Sandra Birchmore, she was the 12-year-old young woman who wanted to go into the Police Explorer program, and she did, going through some very difficult things in her life at that moment in time. Parents had passed, grandma had passed, and, you know, vulnerable, looking for, you know, some figures, some adult figures for some guidance. Well, she found it. However, those adult figures had more than just guidance in mind. They had sexual assault and grooming in mind, allegedly. And that's where that case is at, after she was murdered because she became pregnant with one of the officer's babies, allegedly Matthew Farwell's, allegedly. Oh, but it doesn't stop there. The brother got in on it, too. William, allegedly, was over there, you know, having his way with her. Oh, and the school resource officer, too. It's so twisted. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining me to discuss this case. We got, obviously, Matthew charged. He is he's behind bars right now. The brother, though, William, I'm still curious about this. We're hearing more and more claiming that there was a sexual encounter 22 days before her death, knowing she was pregnant with his brother's child. Why no charges over here? Is it because there really wasn't any sort of crimes committed, at least none that they can track right now, that go younger than her being 18?
Right. The thing is, was she a minor or was she a consenting adult when she engaged in sexual relationships with the brother? And at this point, there's no information, apparently, that authorities have that it was prior and that the, you know, relationship or sexual relationship was consensual. So unless they breach that, or unless they find out that the brother helped Matthew Farwell cover up or otherwise be engaged in the crime that he committed, at least allegedly committed, in murdering her and staging the murder to look like a suicide, unless they can, or cover up at the end any sort of aiding and abetting that case, their hands are tied. I mean, it's just such a moral sick situation. But I do find it very interesting that he has declared, you know, that he can never be a law enforcement officer again. I think all of us expect that to happen. But he did that pretty easily. And so it makes me wonder what else might be await him in terms of punishment, because that's a big punishment if that's all you've ever done.
It is.
A police officer, and now you can't.
Could that be part of a bigger deal that we've not heard about yet? Could he be on the other side of this talking and really sharing the information on his brother to incriminate him as much as possible in exchange for immunity or maybe a future lesser sentence should he be charged?
I think it's possible. I really do. The government is going to want more details. They have the conversations. They have the video of him being in her building and his face being covered and so on and so forth. They have a lot of good circumstantial evidence. But boy, if they could get somebody to just wrap it up in a bow to talk about how either he bragged about it or told his brother about what he had done, about how he staged everything, exactly why he did it, I think most of us can understand. But if you have a witness that can come forward and say, yeah, he told me this, that would be just dynamite for this case. And they want to make sure this case is rock solid. They do not want him being acquitted in this case.
Yeah. I want to ask you another question about this case because I find it insanely ironic and I don't really believe in coincidences. I don't see any clear connection here of impropriety, but it certainly is weird. Michael Proctor, also the first officer on the scene at not only this case, but at the case of another case that we've been following for about a year and a half now, the Anna Walsh case. where Brian Walsh, the man who did all those Google searches right after allegedly murdering his wife on New Year's Day in 23. Bruce Proctor that was on the scene there as well. I just find it insanely odd that it's a small department. The same officer is in three major stories that we cover. I've never seen this before.
Well, I think there's a couple of things to consider. First of all, of course, he works for the Massachusetts State Police. And the Massachusetts State Police, unlike some other jurisdictions throughout the country, the minute it becomes a case like this that could be, I think in this case, they believed it was a suicide from the signs they initially looked at. But there's still, it's a death.
Yeah.
And so death investigations are going to be investigated by the state police immediately. So it's not like a lot of other jurisdictions where those jurisdictions have their own homicides departments and their own homicide detectives that investigate it. This always goes straight to the state unit. So now you have within the Massachusetts State Police Department just a finite number of Massachusetts state detectives or troopers. They're troopers, but they're really homicide detectives. That's what they're assigned to do. And then of those of that group, which is typically seen as the highest level of detective you can achieve. Mm-hmm. It is the gold standard within your department. You know, you usually go from, you know, a property guy and then maybe domestic violence. And then to get a homicide detective role, trooper role in this case, it's a big accolade, the best of the best usually. And so it's a small department and in relation to all the other troopers. And Tony, you have a certain area you cover, if you will.
Yeah.
Obviously, Proctor isn't going to, you know, cover hundreds of miles from where he's at. It's divided up in this way that you have a territory. And the other thing is that people might not realize is you're literally on call at certain times. So it could be every other weekend. It could be every third weekend. But you're on call for any death that occurs, and so you go out. So I know it seems really, you know, coincidental. Yeah. But I would argue that it's not really coincidental that he's probably on so many of these death investigations because of the numbers.
It just happens that there were these three major ones in a very condensed area. I mean, it does make sense. I'm not saying there's any impropriety by Proctor on this. Or on the Anna Walsh case, it's just like, what? What? Like, it would be so much better if it was like, he's a great officer. Look how the good work he did in the Karen Reed case. Look all the good work he did in the Sandra Birchmore case. Unfortunately, that's not reality. It's more like, that's the last man you want on this case. And there he is popping up his head in that one. It's, it's so much so that the attorneys, the defense for Brian Walsh are requesting his phone data because they want to see what was going on in his cell phone during the time of Brian Walsh's charging and arrest. They're basing that on the Karen Reed situation to see what other things he may have been saying or what sort of improprieties may have been going on there. God knows what they're going to find if they get access to those records, if they even still exist. But yeah. Well,
yeah, Tony, they're looking for a similar type of statement, right? In the Karen Reed case, he said defaming things about her. I mean, basically, he believed she was responsible for John O'Keefe's murder early on, based on all the circumstances. Yeah. Again, that case, in my view, is not a, you know, wire fraud or wiretap, huge conspiracy involving a lot of people. It's a hit and run to me,
yeah.
A domestic hit and run situation.
Sure.
And he viewed it that way. And he quickly came to a judgment and said despicable things about her when it's presumed that law enforcement officers do not talk about people that are involved in their investigations in this way. And they're wanting his records to see how he talked about Brian Walsh and probably talked about him pretty similarly.
I don't think he's going to call Brian Walsh, though, a no-ass bitch. I just don't see that being one of the phrases he used. I'm sure there's probably some choice phrases in there, but Brian ain't a no ass bitch.
Yeah. Well, I'll agree with you on that one. But probably derogatory.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, that's totally guessing. I'm just saying, based on things we know that he wrote in regard to the Karen Reed case, we know it's very possible he could have referred to other people he thought were murderers in that same way.
Yeah, I agree.
Strap in and get ready to go back in time. Gen X Time Machine is here to transport you back to the glorious days of neon, big hair, and cassette tapes that always needed rewinding.
To figure out where Tupperware, like, went wrong, we kind of got to start at the beginning.
Remember when MTV actually played music videos? Or when lunch wasn't complete without Dunkaroos? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like trying to recapture the magic of a bygone era.
Yeah.
We're diving into all that and more. So if you want to relive the 80s and 90s in all their retro glory, hit up Gen X Time Machine wherever you get your podcasts.
VHS is looking like the obvious winner, right?
Oh, and don't forget the rise of the video rental store, remember?
Subscribe, because who doesn't need another excuse to avoid adulting? You're welcome, the Gen X Time Machine.